This is Wednesday, the 1st of March, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. president puts forth his goals before the Congress.
What we are witnessing today is the renewal of the American spirit.
We'll talk with VOA national correspondent Jim Malone about it. Also ahead, not all that long ago, China was limiting couples to one child. Now they're considering financial incentives to encourage couples to have a second. And you'll hear about a way you might soon be able to really tell what your pet is thinking and feeling, if that's what you really want. It's all on today's International Edition. World leaders have been digesting U.S. President Donald Trump's first speech to Congress last night. The U.S. president spoke about the United States' commitment to NATO and his plan to forge a new global trading system. Henry Ridgewell has more from London.
Donald Trump's speech may have been directed at a domestic audience. The president repeatedly pledged to put America first, but this was a performance watched around the world.
It is American leadership based on vital security interests that we share with our allies all across the globe. We strongly support NATO, an alliance forged through the bonds of two world wars that dethroned fascism and the Cold War, and defeated communism. But our partners must meet their financial obligations.
The warmer tone has been welcomed, says Ian Bond of the London-based Centre for European Reform, who spoke to VOA via Skype.
He didn't repeat the suggestion that it was obsolete, and he did stress the importance of NATO. But underneath that, he's still talking in terms of NATO countries paying their bills as though, you know, America is a kind of bodyguard service.
President Trump pledged one of the largest increases in national defense spending in American history.
Even many Republicans, I think, are telling him that it's a mistake to gut U.S. overseas development assistance and the State Department in order to fund this very large increase in military spending.
A scaling back of US involvement overseas is likely to be seen as an opportunity for the world's second largest economy, says David Kelly, director of research at China Policy, a Beijing-based research group.
Once again, Trump has left large spaces open for China to, in a sense, exploit in diplomatic terms.
Beijing was singled out by Donald Trump as he repeated accusations that the global trade system is not benefiting America.
We've lost 60,000 factories since China joined the World Trade Organization in 2001.
Trump did not directly mention the travel ban on citizens from seven Muslim-majority countries that was struck down by the courts. Beyond his vow to extinguish the Islamic State terror group, there was no mention of Africa, a region looking for direction on Trump's future engagement, says Stephen Groost of the South African Institute of International Affairs.
We haven't really seen very much at all out of this administration in this first month on what his Africa policy is going to be. We don't have an assistant secretary of state. We have many ambassadorships that are vacant, South Africa being one of them.
The more measured tone of the speech has been generally welcomed, but analysts say many world leaders want more policy detail on President Trump's promise of a new chapter of American greatness. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Here in the United States, much is being made of a perceived change in the president's demeanor during the speech, one that many are calling a brighter tone than he had in his inauguration speech 6 years ago. Instead of what was perceived as the negative tone of the inaugural address, Mr. Trump last night made an obvious attempt to deliver a positive message. Listen.
What we are witnessing today is the renewal of the American spirit. Our allies will find that America is once again ready to lead.
The president painted a picture of how he would like the United States to evolve.
Dying industries will come roaring back to life. Heroic veterans will get the care they so desperately need. Our military will be given the resources its brave warriors so richly deserve. Crumbling infrastructure will be replaced.
Well, that opens many questions. Hopefully to answer some of them, all he can and all we can, we welcome VOA national correspondent Jim Malone, as we always do after such situations. Jim's been not doing much over the past couple of days or so. Actually, he's been running around like the proverbial chicken without a head. And, you know, there are... There is a lot of positive things being said. The ratings, the president's ratings have gone up since the speech. The stock market is going through the roof today. But what's your view of the speech? Did he say what he needed to say? Did he do what he needed to do?
Well, I think the big takeaway at the moment, Ira, is this focus on a softer tone, a more optimistic outlook, particularly if you contrast the speech to the joint session of Congress with his inaugural address, where the references were to American carnage and kind of dark times that we need to reverse. And in fact, some of the early poll numbers are pretty encouraging for President Trump. CBS News poll, 76% found the speech presidential. Another poll in CNN, 70% made them feel more optimistic listening and watching the speech. So, it looks like for now there's been this, I won't say transformation, that may be too strong, but he's taken some of the edges off. And you could see that that pleased a lot of Republicans. Democrats, I don't think were as sure how to react, although we already are getting reaction from leaders like Chuck Schumer, the Senate leader, saying, well, it's fine, it's just a speech because he's still governing from the hard right.
Yeah, and it wasn't really much past generalities as far as calling for $1 trillion to rebuild the infrastructure. Where is he going to find the money? That type of thing. Also, he made a point about increased spending for the military and the Pentagon.
I am sending Congress a budget that rebuilds the military, eliminates the defense sequester, and calls for one of the largest increases in national defense spending in American history. My budget will also increase funding for our veterans. Our veterans have delivered for this nation, and now we must deliver for them.
Well, I mean, that news had already been made public that he was going to call for a big increase in defense spending. First of all, what's the sequester he was talking about?
Well, this was congressionally imposed limits on growth in these budgets, excuse me, for defense and domestic programs as well. Look, this is a significant turn, okay? When he's talking about a $54 billion increase in the military budget, and some of the cuts, at least he's indicated initially, are going to come out of diplomacy, including public diplomacy. I think that is getting a lot of attention around the world from world leaders, but we don't have enough information yet to fill in some of the blanks. Does this mean, you know, more interest overseas militarily and getting involved in things? Trump has said no, as far as we know, but it just calls for a lot more information than we're getting. As you said, a lot of outlines here, an ambitious agenda, but not a lot of details.
It's interesting that the speaker, or rather the majority leader of the House, Mitch McConnell, of the Senate, rather, Mitch McConnell has already disagreed with that kind of idea.
Yeah, I noted that, too. That was very interesting. And look, there's going to be other disagreements to come. This was a nice moment for Donald Trump. He had the tone right. He set out his agenda. He's getting some good reviews. The hard work is about to begin, and it starts with something like revamping the healthcare system in the United States. Ask Bill Clinton, ask Barack Obama about how easy that is to do and what the political consequences
Trump
are.
Trump has already said it's really confusing.
And complicated.
He's already said that. Jim Malone, stay with us for a second. Andrew Palczewski is searching social media to see how the reaction is coming in as far as the speech last night.
Yeah, not surprising given President Trump's penchant for using social media. This is a speech that really did live on social media. Even before it started, you had members of Congress tweeting out photos and videos of their guests, many of which were immigrants or refugees. You had pictures of the Democratic Women's Caucus wearing white in honor of the suffragettes, the women who fought for the right to vote. And you had a picture of President Trump getting into the presidential limo where it looked like he was practicing and reading over his speech that made the rounds beforehand. And then throughout the course of the speech and now into the day after, you have a lot of dissection of the different points, a lot of questions about how some of these things might be implemented or paid for. And you see a lot of people jumping on the specific issues that mean the most to them. The two or three that really stuck out were immigration, security, and the economy. Those were some big ticket items that a lot of people were talking about, particularly in light of that immigration order that came out a few weeks ago, and with one set to be released later this week. A lot of questions about the immigration ban and how that might be implemented.
Which, Jim, still might be under discussion. There's all kinds of things about immigration saying that even if before he puts out a second executive order, that things are still changing at the White House.
The speech, the revised order, these could be signs that there's more developments going on inside the White House, kind of a battle for Donald Trump's heart and soul. We don't know, but there certainly seems like there have been some, you know, discussions or disputes in some cases. And, you know, speaking of social media and Twitter, where has Donald Trump been? I mean, he's been a little quiet of late, and I wonder if that goes to the tone issue as well.
Well, that's the interesting thing. We saw not tweets coming from the Donald Trump Twitter account last night, but from the @POTUS account, which is the official White House presidential account. Those tweets were coming out, and we saw that with President Obama. They would do that during his speeches, send out these tweets with the different messaging, with different kind of graphics and icons and things. And so we saw them using that tactic on social media last night. But I do want to note, Twitter has come out with their numbers this morning. They said this is the most tweeted State of the Union or joint address ever. The previous record was 2.6 million tweets during the speech. This had over 3 million. So
this might save Twitter.
For a president that uses Twitter so much, it's perhaps not surprising that it generated so much interest on that social media.
Andrew Palaszewski, Jim Malone, thank you both and greatly appreciate it. Thanks for being with us both. This is International Edition. Among the top stories we're covering for you, making his first address before the U.S. Congress, President Trump tells lawmakers the time for small thinking is over, the time for trivial fights is behind us. Malaysia charged two women with murder Wednesday in connection with the death of Kim Jong-nam, the half-brother of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. A new United Nations report says opposing sides in the fight for control of Aleppo committed war crimes. Afghan officials say a group of heavily armed Taliban suicide bombers have assaulted a district police headquarters in western Kabul, sparking a fierce gun battle with security forces. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition, and this is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study in the monthly notices of the Royal Astronomical Society suggests that scientists have found the proverbial missing link in the formation of planets. The study provides an explanation of how dust left over from star formation gathers or accretes material that eventually goes on to form planetary systems. A new theory developed by the scientists from various numerical simulations and analytical calculations explains the progression from dust particles into pebbles, then into what will become the building blocks of planets. Gas also left over from star formation moves the particles around, which could prevent them from accreting. But research suggests that high-pressure regions called dust traps form to slow the dust particles enough so that they can join together and grow into larger objects. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
As you might have felt, we are moving our attention to Asia. Faced with an aging population, China, state-run China Daily says Chinese authorities are considering financial incentives to encourage couples to have a second child. Surveys show a majority of young childbearing couples faced with economic constraints are reluctant to do that. China last year relaxed its more than four-decade-old family planning policy, which mandated a strict one-child policy that resulted in widespread forced abortions. The vice minister of the National Health and Planning Commission said the incentives might include birth rewards and subsidies. But Reggie Littlejohn, the founder and president of Women's Rights Without Frontiers, told VOA's Victor Beatty that Chinese authorities have come to realize they've created a demographic disaster.
And that's the reason that they switched from a one-child policy to a two-child policy, is because their population is aging very quickly and they are losing a workforce, and therefore they need to replace their workers. But things are so expensive in China in terms of raising a kid that most families only want to have one child. So now they are trying to provide financial incentives to encourage people to have more children.
Isn't it a good news, though, that the birth rate is up to nearly 18 million?
It's not up 18 million. It's up 1.3 million. They had 18.46 million last year, and it's up 1.31 million more than 2015. And yes, of course, I'm always happy for more babies being born, but actually, this is not as much as they had hoped for, and that's why I think that they are reduced to trying to give people incentives to have more children.
Are forced abortions still going on?
Oh, absolutely. We had some forced abortions of third children that were reported late last summer. So forced abortion is continuing under the new two-child policy. So basically, they have not changed the policy other than to forcibly abort people after two instead of after one.
So will the financial incentives be enough, do you think?
Well, they would have to be very generous financial incentives. I do think that living in China is so expensive today in terms of housing and education, and also having very short maternity and paternity leaves, that unless they do something drastic like give people a baby bonus, they're not going to see the birth rate rise much. Another thing that I would suggest to them is that they should give an extra bonus, maybe even a double bonus, for people giving birth to second daughters in order to curb the sex selective abortion of baby girls, which particularly hits second daughters.
Should they eliminate all limits on reproduction at this point?
It makes no sense whatsoever. They're still not allowing women who are unmarried to have babies. They're still forcibly aborting third children, and meanwhile, they are desperate to have more children because their working age population is declining, their aging population is increasing, and they don't have the ability to support this aging population.
Last month, China revealed in its National Population Development Plan that the population will likely peak at 1.45 billion people by 2050, and its working age population will actually decline between 2021 and 2030, affecting growth and revenue. It's also said its population over the age of 60 will increase to one quarter of the population by 2030. This is VOA.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. voanews.com.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Got the story just in on the wire. It says more than 230 former ABC News correspondents, the American Broadcasting Company executives and producers, have signed a letter urging the network's current top executive to take a firm stand against any Trump administration effort to curtail press access. The letter, which circulated on a Facebook forum for ex-ABC News employees, was written after White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer held an informal briefing last Friday excluding several news organizations that have done stories angering President Trump and his team. The signees are asking the ABC News president to take a public stand, refuse to take part in any future White House briefings based on an invitation list of who is in and who is out. We continue now. Many dog and cat owners think they know how their animals are feeling. Well, that may be true. An animal collar or jacket equipped with sensors could give them even more information about the emotional state of their pet. We get now more from VOA's Deborah Block.
You can't ask your dog or cat how it is feeling. So this jacket or collar could show if your pet is excited, relaxed, playful, or even annoyed. The data from the sensors is transmitted to a smartphone app. In Tokyo, the head of the Japanese company that invented the device hopes people will better understand the emotions of their pets.
Knowing the emotions of dogs is quite important. We invented this jacket to help people who train specific dogs, such as assistant dogs and detector dogs, to understand how dogs are reacting and feeling.
But the jacket and collar can also help the average pet owner, not only with the mental state of their pet, but its health too.
By monitoring the heart rate of a dog, we can understand the details of its health condition. Our device can track the heart rate of dogs and cats, which helps people better maintain the health of old dogs and cats.
The technology could prove useful in his practice, says a veterinarian.
As such technology develops, humans will become more capable of communicating with animals, just as they interact with humans.
The jacket and collar are expected to go on sale in May. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
That's going to wrap up our program for this Wednesday, the 1st of March. This is International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. Like us on Facebook at VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for being with us. Our director, Patrice Martin. Thank her. Thank engineer Nick Ivanoff. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Drought-related water and food shortages are posing a risk to many in Namibia, and the U.S. government is providing help. Through the United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, the U.S. will purchase 8 water tanker trucks and promote community and school sanitation valued at $1.6 million. Additionally, USAID, with funding from the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, known as PEPFAR, is rolling out $2.2 million for drought assistance activities to help malnourished HIV patients, pregnant and lactating women, orphans, and vulnerable children in food-insecure districts in Namibia with a high HIV burden. In collaboration with the Ministry of Health and Social Services, USAID will support the training of health extension workers to identify and refer HIV-positive individuals and vulnerable children that are malnourished. Referred clients will receive a medical assessment and, if needed, therapeutic nutritional feeding supplements, as well as counseling on improved nutrition and hygiene. To support the Ministry of Gender Equality and Child Welfare's efforts, USAID will assist in expediting the registration of orphans and vulnerable children for social grants to mitigate the effect of drought on vulnerable children. In addition, USAID will work with the Office of the Prime Minister and UN organizations to ensure coordination, technical support, and sustainability of the response. USAID anticipates providing nutrition screening and counseling to over 42,000 people living with HIV and providing food supplements to up to 14,000 vulnerable children. These drought assistant interventions support the existing PEPFAR and Namibian government program to meet the UN AIDS targets to combat HIV in the country. Since 2005, the U.S. government, through PEPFAR, has invested over $1.1 billion in the Namibian health sector. In 2015, an additional $34 million was dedicated to accelerate treatment for all in support of the Ministry of Health and Social Services' fight against HIV/AIDS. The United States stands with its partner, Namibia, to help meet the urgent water and nutritional needs of the people of Namibia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.